The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
As you, some of you know, that I was in the Dominican Republic over Easter break, and there is a great deal of very fine church growth going on there. The Christian Reformed Mission now has 135 organized and unorganized churches in connection with our denominational work there. And the Assemblies of God denomination also is growing very well, although largely among a different group of people. The Assemblies of God work is among the Dominicans, and the Christian Reform work is largely among Haitians who live in the Dominican Republic. Now, I asked a number of questions, just like you're going to be asking questions, as you try to do these interviews and find out what makes church growth happen or not happen in a particular context. I was asking the people who are knowledgeable in the Dominican Republic, how do the Assemblies of God start churches? And I was told that they are working, number one, among Dominicans, Spanish-speaking Dominicans. Number two, they tend to work among middle-class people, and they begin, their first step is the renting or erecting. In some cases, they erect a building even before a group has started. They pick a location where there's no other church around and where they think there's a likelihood of getting a church started. They rent or they erect a building, and then step two, they go in with a prolonged evangelistic campaign. Now, that campaign will probably be every night or six nights a week, day after day after day. Lots of music, lots of excitement. Assemblies of God members from other churches come in and help in the work to get this new church started. Number three, they fly in, bring in from other countries, some of them from North America, other Latin American countries, the best evangelists they can get. They even use Americans with less than perfect Spanish, because in the group that they're the social group that they're working with, an American evangelist is a drawing card, even if he doesn't have the world's best Spanish. Now, they will have these campaigns for a minimum of 2 weeks, but usually up to 8 or 10 weeks, and they keep going until they have enough people who have professed Christ, been baptized. Now, this is an interesting thing. Number four is they have a number which they feel is necessary in order for a church to start. And they distinguish between the campaign converts and the number that are likely to remain with the church in order to get it started. And they told me that they like about 150 as the number to start a church, because they want it to be almost immediately self-supporting. So the crusade goes on until they have 400 to 500 converts. Now, this crusade is their tactic. First a building, then this intensive crusade. They get 400 or 500 converts. They know that two-thirds of those are going to slough off. But with the remaining, they have a church. And that's the formula. Pick a location, get a building, fly in the music, the musicians, the evangelists, the preachers, an intense campaign until you've got the number that you feel is sufficient, realizing you're going to lose about two-thirds to three-quarters of them. But when you've got enough that you know that the church is viable, bang-o, you've got a congregation started. Now, what does it say about this method? Well, number one, they're working in a rather middle-class society. They're not working among the very poor, because you could have 150 poor and still not have a self-supporting church according to the standards they're working with. Number two, it's a largely receptive population. The Dominican Republic today is a very ripe field. You can go in and you can have this 2-3 month campaign and you probably will have a church started. Now, there are places, you go to Thailand or Sri Lanka or parts of India, and you could work for 2-3 years and not have 150 converts. But you've got a receptive population. Number three, it's a population that is not averse to having foreigners come in and be part of a church planting team. Another thing, they are very frank about the importance of a building. Now, we're going to see some slides pretty soon that will give us another approach to this subject. Now, missionaries divide on this. Some feel, listen, be realistic. People like buildings. You've got to have a nice building. That's the way to start a church. Others say, hey, you're going to get stuck with a lot of white elephants, buildings that don't have any churches in them. And in some societies, that's true. I can show you places in the world where there are empty churches. I've seen churches turned into warehouses and barns and stores because somebody thought they could start a church, they bought a building or they put a building up, and it didn't work out. Now, the Assemblies of God are not foolish people. They are experienced missionaries and excellent church planters, and they know that in a culture, in a society like the Dominican Republic right now, you can do this approach and probably not fail with it. Well, what else could you say about it? In the places you know, would this be the way to go or wouldn't it? Would it work in Central America near? Now, I think there are some things beneath the surface here that perhaps I would want to follow through on and research a little further. My guess is that among those 150 people, there will also be some good seasoned Assemblies of God members that join this new church. Because you've got to have seasoned leadership. You've got to have mature Christians to provide that leadership. You can't have a church built on around 150 completely new converts. You wouldn't have any leadership. I think there's other things that are happening here. But it strikes me that in a receptive population, you can do things with the building and even with the use of foreign evangelists that you couldn't do in some other places, or would be highly risky. Now, let me tell you about the CRC strategy in Dominican, yes? I think so, yeah. And they're very flexible as far as the requirements. As to who can become a pastor, it's mostly based on the gifts and the experience and the record a man has as far as his faithfulness and his fruitfulness and work in some other group. Yeah. Now, the CRC work got started about 8 years ago in the Dominican Republic. And as I mentioned earlier, there are already 135 churches in the CRC of the Dominican Republic. Now, this is a phenomenal growth. Let me explain a couple of things. First of all, the work got started through radio contacts. Throughout Latin America, the Christian Reformed Church has a radio program. The radio preacher is the Argentine pastor, Juan Bunstra. And in the Dominican Republic, a pastor of a Haitian congregation wrote to the Back to God Hour and asked for affiliation with the CRC. And let me say that this pastor, though not a highly educated man at all, could speak Creole as well as Spanish, spoke Spanish with a lot of errors, but he was pastoring a small church in Abate. Abate is a small cane cutters village. Abates are scattered all over the Dominican Republic, and the agricultural workers live in these abates, small village. Santo Domingo, the capital, is here. And this is Haiti on this side. And this is Dominican Republic. Now, this pastor wrote to the Baptist God Hour and said, I have decided to call my church La Iglesia Cristiana Reformada, Christian Reformed Church of Tirana, Abate Tirana. And because of that contact and the correspondence with this man, missionaries from Puerto Rico over here started visiting Dominican Republic in 1978. And I was there at that time too. I was area secretary for Latin America, and I made a visit in January of 1978. By the summer of 78, there were three churches that were calling themselves Christian Reformed. And the significant thing about these churches was that they did not belong to any particular denomination. The whole work there is riding the crest of a groundswell where the gospel is spreading spontaneously among Haitian people who are working, desperately poor people, cane cutters, working in the Dominican Republic. Now, of the 135 churches, roughly half of them were organized and were already with pastors before they came into the Christian Reformed Church. The other half have begun since then. A significant factor is that of the ones, these independent churches that have joined the Christian Reformed denomination, almost all of them have quadrupled in membership since they came in. So that you've got growth of several kinds here occurring simultaneously. Now, they are drawn into the Christian Reformed Church, number one, because they want some kind of affiliation. Number two, they like being affiliated with an American denomination. Number three, while we don't pay salaries and we don't pass money around, we do offer one thing that they place a very high value on, and that is that we organize Christian schools. And the pastors regard the Christian school as the only hope for the children of their churches. Now again, we got to remember the demographics here. These are Haitian people, many of whom are illegal immigrants to the Dominican Republic. They're desperately poor. Some of them have no security because they're illegal. They're always harassed, and there is very little educational opportunity available for Haitian children in the public schools. Most of them would never get beyond first or second grade, if even that far, if it were not for the Christian schools that the churches now are establishing. Now, the strategy that we have developed is evangelistic, educational, and very holistic in a number of ways. We have a health program, agricultural assistance, classes in emergency first aid. Every church now has its own little botiquín. It has its own medicine cabinet, and someone is trained in very basic paramedic orientation. Very low-key, from our standpoint, almost, senseless. It's so rudimentary. But in that situation, it's a tremendous thing. Now, that, I think, explains the attractiveness of joining in a denominational context as viewed by these little independent congregations all over the Dominican Republic. You find these. 135 of them now affiliated with our denomination and moving toward a reformed position. And I also say that there's a lot of Pentecostalism among them. There's a lot of, doctrinal ignorance. So the best you can say is, are they reformed? Well, not exactly, but they're committed to moving toward it. And as long as that commitment is there, the mission has decided to take the risks and go with it. So, what's happening there? Well, number one, you've got a lot of church growth that is spontaneous on the part of Spirit-anointed men and women among the Haitians in these bates. They hear the gospel, they get converted, they begin evangelizing, they start a church, but they're unaffiliated with anybody. And roughly 70 of them now have joined this denomination. Others are being started by the sheer excitement and growth that is occurring. In chapel this morning, I talked about this one gentleman, this elderly pastor, Pastor Mani. The man has started more than 20 churches in his life. He started three the last 4 years. In a receptive culture where there are a lot of spiritual interest and where the gospel is growing rapidly, these things can happen. But I think also, demographically, a major factor is the fact that the Haitians are an oppressed people, they're poor, they see the gospel very holistically. Jesus Christ is coming and he's changing our way of life, and the church is a blessing in every way. And these Christians that now embrace us really care about us because they come and they teach us health and they help us with agriculture and they're teaching our children. So that approach is what's working. It's very different than the one I talked about first. The Assemblies of God are working among middle class, Spanish-speaking Dominicans. They go in, they put up a building. We don't put up buildings. But both strategies are working effectively. Any thoughts on that or comments? No, I meant that 135 are officially affiliated. About 70 of them were independent congregations unaffiliated with anybody before they affiliated with our denomination. So roughly half of them have started as a result of the mission work, and half of them came in already with a certain degree of organization, and usually always with a pastor. There are seven missionary families and four single people, two men, two women. And then on top of that, there are another five relief workers, couples. So approximately a dozen missionary families plus four or five single people.
What is a bit about them?
Yeah. Yeah.
When they what's their responsibility or
what's their role? Yeah, okay. What they've done is they've divided the country up by zones. And each missionary lives in his zone. Now, there are a couple of them living here in Santo Domingo because there's more schools and more churches congested right around there. But what they do is each is responsible for his zone, and the main work of the missionary is training the pastors. The missionary does a lot of itinerating, visiting the churches. They'll try to get 2 to 3 churches every Sunday and midweek also. But their main job is midweek TEE classes for pastors. And that is proving to be a key thing. The Haitians, the Haitians are different than the Latin Americans, say, in Central America or Mexico. You see it right away in the churches. Well, first of all, they're very dark-skinned. They are very Negro, African black. Number two, the gospel is probably strongest among the men rather than the women. Now, that's not typical of Latin America. All the churches that I visited had more men than women. Roughly even, but I would say 55-45%. Sunday morning, there were 135 in that church, and I would say 75 of them were men. Sunday evening, it was about equal, but the men's side, they sit on separate sides, so it's very easy to tell who's whether men are numerous than women. But certainly the men outnumber the women. And they seem to have no trouble getting leadership. There is not a dearth of male leadership at all. Now, that's a very healthy sign, of course. And again, that always the missionary's role depends on the context. What is the reality here? Now, so often in some countries where you don't have male leadership, the missionary is having to do everything. The pastor has to is expected, they say, pastor-centrico, huh? Pastor-centered, everything the pastors do. Well, you don't have that with the Haitians. There's male leadership, the men are in the church, and they seem to have a spontaneous development of leadership in the congregation. So the missionary takes a different role. And his role at this point, thank God, can be, might say, a bit behind the lines, but training. Doctrine classes, Bible studies, how to make a sermon, and so forth. And the missionaries feel that the reason that even the churches that were organized when they came into the movement have quadrupled in membership is because they're getting better teaching. There's just a more of God's word is getting across to the people, and the fruits are visible. I think there's differences from place to place again in the North America also. But let me say that the greatest risk that the CRC mission is taking in Dominican Republic and is right in that area. Infant baptism is not. Now, the missionaries are baptized and they're using that as a model and in these churches. This is Haiti. This is voodoo country. You just don't find any churches that don't have it to some extent. Now, what do you do? Do you stay small and purist? Or do you go with it and teach, teach, teach? And they have opted to take the risk and go with the flow, so to speak. The movement is there. They're predicting 500 churches by 1990. And they're talking about going for all 400,000 Haitians in the Dominican. Interestingly, none of the other churches want to work with Haitians. The Haitians have a very bad reputation, and they're scorned. They're viewed as spiritist and voodoo worshippers, and their churches are laughed at and so forth. And the CRC mission has decided to go for it and to use this strategy. Schools for the children, holistic approach to improve the quality of life of the members, and training of the pastors. Now, I suspect there is going to be some splits. There are going to be some who go just so far and then they sever. I suspect that it's going to take a long time before the mission. However, it's interesting. Certainly Creole for the older ones. I want to focus on TEE worker, the TEE mission, as a counselor class people. Then family ministry. Counselor is there. There's various things you can do. Remember receiving something in order holistic from the start.